this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSilicast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, December 27th, 2009, and this is show number 238, the last show of 2009. Well, it's great to be back from Mexico. It was hard work applying all that suntan lotion, finding enough lawn chairs, waving down the Cabana boys to bring us margaritas. I'm just so glad to be home. That was exhausting. It is the weirdest, in a good way, thing to hear the show when I'm gone. I just love hearing Bart do the show. His voice is so lyrical and fun. I loved him talking about how hard it is to do, too. It's kind of nice to have someone else walk a mile in my shoes and appreciate how much work this actually takes. Now, granted, he doesn't have it streamlined like maybe I do, but still, it is a fair amount of work, so it was kind of fun to hear that. Now, I took a whole bunch of notes when Bart was talking, so I'd remember what I wanted to say when I got back. This is one of those things where you're yelling at the iPod and you wish you could break in and say, hey, what about this? For example, when Bart and Lola were chit-chatting across the pond to Canada, they were talking about his camera bag, and Lola asked him if it was a LowPro. Well, coincidentally, I just got a LowPro camera bag for Christmas. I already have a bag that I love. It's the Tamarack Adventure 9 from Tamarack.com. I love this bag because it carries my SLR in a tight area for the camera with three lenses, and then it has kind of a small pocket area above it that's big enough to carry a jacket and lunch. Plus, it has a slide-in slot for my MacBook Pro. It's the ultimate bag for travel because I can cram in chargers and all kinds of other crapola in there like books. So the question might be, why do I need a new case? Well, that giant case is a big pain in the butt if you're, say, you know, just going to somebody's barbecue and you want to throw in the camera to take a few snapshots. I remember dragging this giant bag to high school award ceremonies and feeling like a camel carrying supplies for a three-month safari or something. Wait, do camels go on safari or am I mixing continents again? Yeah, I've never been good at geography. Anyway, I really needed a small case that would still hold my camera and three lenses, plus some space for maybe a few chargers and little stuff. When we were on vacation this summer, Steve forgot his camcorder charger for about the 11th time in a row, so we went on a hunt for a universal charger, and we found this delightful camera shop that did have the charger he needed. Yay! They had also the perfect case I was looking for. It's the LowPro Micro Trekker 100. Runs for around $50 on Amazon right now. Of course, it was $70 before Christmas. Anyway, it's sort of like a miniature version of the Tamarack. It's still a backpack. It has the same configuration for the lenses, but it has a smaller zipper pocket kind of over the front of the lenses that you can cram with things like glasses, maybe a small paperback, and this, of course, has no room for a full-size laptop. There's a handle on the top that allows you to carry it, like a bag instead of a backpack, when the backpack kind of seems silly for a particular event. Comedically, it comes with straps for across your chest and around your waist when it's in the backpack configuration. It's kind of silly because it's this little tiny backpack. Anyway, we'll probably just cut those off because they're just kind of silly. Maybe when I was hanging upside down on the zip line in Mexico, that would have been important, but that's about the only time I could think of you really need those. If you're looking for a compact backpack-style camera case for an SLR, I think the LowPro Micro Trekker 100 is a fine choice. Let's see. Another thing I heard in chit-chat across the pond, Lola was describing everything she packed for her trip away to college. I love that she packed all of her electronics and forgot socks. Lola, you are so my people. Every year, Steve and I go away for one night to a swanky hotel to attend this formal dinner dance. You know, tuxedos and full-length dresses and all that. My packing list starts with camera, cell phone, chargers, laptops, MiFi. Somewhere way down the list are silly things like pantyhose and high-heeled shoes. Well, one thing that left me wondering, though, in your description, Lola, of what you packed, you said you packed a microphone. But you didn't tell us what microphone. Come on, what kind of a geek are you? You got to tell us what mic you packed. I expect a full report. I was kind of picturing a blue snowflake or something like that, but I just wasn't sure. Please get back to us on this critical bit of information. I was very pleased that you actually caught Bart loving not one, but two things right out of the box. I have to say, even Bart would have trouble finding a flaw, though, with a 27-inch iMac, but he's been known to be cranky about the most lovable things. I almost fell out of my hammock and spilled my blue Hawaiian when I heard Bart say that he loved the Magic Mouse, though. How could that be? It's rare enough for normal people to like Apple mice. How you got him to say he liked one is completely beyond me. Well, let's see. One last thing. Lee, I cannot believe this was your first review, the one you did on the Kodak ZI-8. It was positively fabulous. Your voice is delightful, you covered many features without dragging it out, and you gave us both the good and the bad of the device. I thought it was very balanced and helpful. I sure do hope you do more reviews for the show, besides me being inherently lazy and enjoying it when other people do all the heavy lifting for the show. I'd like to hear more about the things you like or don't like in technology. Like I said, you have a great voice. Speaking of reviews from other people doing all the work, let's listen to Matt Hillier from the Stealth Mac podcast.
Hello, Allison and OscillaCast listeners. This is Matt Hillier from the Stealth Mac podcast, back again this week, but I'm not going to give you a new product review or software review. Instead, I'm going to update you on two previous reviews. Now, the first product that I'd like to update you on is the TomTom USA navigation application for the iPhone and iPod Touch. This came out a couple months ago, and they've now recently updated it to version 1.2. With 1.2, they have added some new features, such as advanced lane guidance, which brings more clarity to complex multi-lane exits. And what this does is it adds basically a graphical representation of the exit. It gives you some arrows pointing on the lane that you should be in, as well as a sign that shows the, you know, the interstate numbers, the names of the exit, that type of thing. It helps clarify when you're coming up to a major interchange where you should be in that interchange so you don't miss your exit. The next feature they add is text-to-speech technology for spoken directions. So now instead of just saying turn left, it'll say turn left on Jones Boulevard, turn right on US 66. Now, the one caveat here is you have to use the default voice for the application. You can't choose any of the other voices like Jane or Sam. You have to use the TomTom default female voice. The last feature that they've added in 1.2 is the Help Me emergency menu for easy contact or directions to local emergency providers such as police, fire stations, and hospitals. So if you have an emergency or you have something that, you know, your car breaks down and you're off the side of the road and you need to get a hold of somebody, now you can hit the Help Me menu. And it'll actually allow you to call emergency services and you can give them your location, or it'll actually locate emergency services near you that you can contact. It also gives you directions to them as well. So overall, some very, very great updates to a very good app, in my opinion. It's the TomTom USA navigation application. And currently in the App Store, they are running a special until December 28th that you can buy the application $50 off. Normally it's $99.99, but until December 28th, you can buy it for $49.99. Now, the second update I have for you is on the Apple Magic Mouse. Now, at the end of my review, I said hopefully some third-party applications would come out to support more gestures, more buttons. Well, somebody has. Actually, there's two or three tools out there, but the one that I've found that works the best is something called the Better Touch Tool, and that's by a developer called Andreas Hagenberg. And you can find it at blog.boaster.net. And that's BOASTR.net. I will give the address to Allison to put in her show notes. So what this application does is it allows you to set gestures for various applications. And you can use it for the Magic Mouse, or actually you can use it for your touchpad as well. So you can do things like function and scroll up would increase the brightness of your screen, or function and scroll down would decrease the brightness of your screen. You can do things like two-finger tap left to invoke things like expose. So it's pretty much limitless what you can do. You can use function, control, alt, and command for your modifier keys. You can set up all sorts of shortcuts, all sorts of new gestures. Overall, a very great tool. The developer is working on it constantly. As a matter of fact, he actually did an update on Christmas Eve. I think he took Christmas off, but this gentleman is like updating this application almost every other day. It is, I believe he's calling it an alpha, so it is use at your own risk, although I haven't had any issues with it. Again, that's the Better Touch Tool from the Better Touch Tool blog by Andreas Hagenberg. Overall, two updates to some very, very wonderful products that I have reviewed in the past that only makes them better. My name is Matt Hillier. You can find me at the Stealth Mac podcast. That's thestealthmac.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at BLDNGNERD.
Well, thanks for the updates, Matt. It sounds like the TomTom application is coming along nicely now. You know, I was thinking it was overpriced at $50 at first, but then I realized to buy a new DVD with the current roads for my Acura built-in dash GPS system is $75 just to get an update on the roads. Man, $50 doesn't sound too bad. I'm also excited about the Better Touch tool. I sent your link to Steve and to Kyle because we just got two magic mice in the house for Christmas, and I suggested they go check those out to have a little more fun with their mice. All right, it is time for Rose to regale us with tales of adventure.
G'day, girls and boys. This is take three. Because, you see, when I first started recording this little soundbite about my new iMac, I started on the iPhone. And then I thought, well, if I'm reviewing the iMac, I should just use the iMac. So I downloaded Wiretap Studio and recorded. And then Al told me the sound was really low. So I thought, well, I'll go back and do it on the iPhone again. My dedication to Allison and the No Silver Castaways knows no bounds. So, take three. G'day, girls and boys. I've got a story to tell, and it starts out sad, but don't worry, because it has a happy ending. Last June, my darling mum died. I was devastated, but it was a blessed release for her. She wasn't rich, but there was a small inheritance for me, and I'm sure she would have liked me to be sensible with the money, but she knew that was highly unlikely. But she loved me anyway. Now, in actual fact, I have been sensible with a good portion of it, but within minutes of the cash landing in my bank account, I did two things. On the 26th of October, I finally came up with travel dates that met with the princess's approval and bought my plane tickets to America. And on the 27th of October, I paid for a new 27-inch i7 iMac. And it finally arrived on December the 23rd. It is most beautiful. Now, you could call me a sentimental old fool, but every morning when I fire up the iMac, I say out loud, "Thanks, Mum." My friend Jason, who uses a PC, but apart from that is a very stylish man, gasped when he saw it. And he just reached out and very gently touched the magic mouse and stroked the top of the screen. He bought an iPhone last month, and I think he's about ready to drink the Kool-Aid. However, our first few days have not been without drama. I don't use Migration Assistant on a new machine. I prefer to gradually load stuff as a way of clearing out the gunk. And oh my goodness, the disk drive was making a shocking noise and freezing. With heart palpitating, onto Apple support go I. He sent me some knowledge base articles on how to reset PRAM and SMC, which is System Management Controller. Links to these pages will be in the show notes. And suggested that if this doesn't work and the machine was only a day old, it would probably be declared DOA. And I said, over my dead body, I've waited 8 weeks for this machine. Now, the good news is resetting PRAM seems to have fixed the problem so far. Next week, I'll do a full range of tests and reset the CMC if needed. But fingers crossed. Next problem. I love, 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 love the Magic Mouse, but it has been unpairing itself. As in, mouse unresponsive, sysprefs tells me it's connected but not paired, so I start the pairing process, which goes on forever until I get this message. The pairing attempt was unsuccessful. Now, at this point, I give up, exit, and bam, this is where the mouse comes to life. Most discombobulating. But I've changed the batteries several times, used several different types of batteries, brand new batteries, bloody bloody blah, and the mouse is playing nicely so far. I will, of course, do an update for next week's show on the continuing adventures of Rosie Roo and her faithful companion. But for now, I thought I'd tell you what I've loaded up so far and then toss in some random thoughts. In order, I set up mail. Then I loaded the Time Scroller widget. Then I set up iChat, Tweety, menu meters, which was a brilliant little CPU monitor which sits on your menu bar. Photoshop Element 6. Then I tried ITV, which needs a software update to be compatible. And I don't know to be compatible with what, because or how to do it. The website is quite irritatingly hard to understand. So again, I'll try that next week. And iWork 09. Then on to podcasts. And of course, I loaded NoSillaCast first, and then Mac Bites for the lovely Elaine. I won't discuss the order I loaded the boys' podcast in, because you know what boys are like. They'll just get jealous and start fighting. Now, my pesky mates keep making me come out to play, but they'll be all back at work soon, so my lovely new friend and I will be able to spend some quality time together and get to know each other better. But for the moment, Force Eject came in very handy with my disk drive drummer. Gosh, I adore alliteration. And the top does get quite hot. And of course, for us menu bar junkies, the 27-inch screen is heaven. And I love the tiny little wireless keyboard. And so to finish, I've sent Al some links for the show notes, because she gets very snippy if I forget and she has to do it herself. So see you in the pub.
Well, Rose, I sure hope your iMac is fixed up nicely now with that reset pram. It would be very distressing to learn that you had to send it back after such a long time awaiting her arrival. I'm so glad to see that you have your priorities straight, by the way, on which podcast to load first. Well, it's coming up on the new year, and that means New Year's resolutions. Here's a fun one. How about resolving to find a better way to teach your friends and family how to do things on the computer? If you're on a Mac or on Windows, you could buy Screen Steps to make beautiful lessons for your friends and family, complete with annotated screenshots and text you can write. If you have a website, you can upload the lessons in HTML and even embed video screencasts inside those lessons. Are they more the print out a manual and draw lines on it and marker types? Then try the beautiful PDF output for a professional-looking manual you'll be proud to send them. Screen Steps is only $40 for the standard edition or $80 for the pro version, and you can even knock 25% off the purchase price by using my coupon code NOSILLA, that's my name in all capital letters spelled backwards. Go now to screensteps.com and make your friends and family happy and make yourself look like a professional tech writer.
Dumb.
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 Dumb questions.
Dumb questions. Dumb questions.
What do I? What is?
How come I always have to?
It's time for Dumb Question Corner.
Hi, Alison. Gazmaz from the UK here with a dumb question. But first of all, can I wish you and all the listeners to the NoSillaCast a very happy Christmas. I hope you're enjoying the holidays, whatever your denomination. Okay, Alison. So why am I asking you a dumb question? Well, it's happened to me on numerous occasions. Now, for whatever reason, I don't hide those system files. Yes, I know Apple doesn't like you to see them, but I like to see what I'm not supposed to be messing about with. Yeah, it goes back to my window days. Just let me do it. Let me carry on. Anyway, I also use Hazel, which has a facility to periodically delete your trash. It also has a facility to delete any linked items for any applications, which you also put into the trash. However, very occasionally, and don't ask me why, again, I think it goes back to my Windows days, I like to just clear out the trash before I'm leaving my user account or before I'm going to do any system updates. And on a couple of occasions, I've checked what's in the trash, i.e. just a quick cursory glance, and there may just be one item in there. But on, as I say, several occasions, when I've then hit empty the trash, the system tells me that there are 6, 8, or possibly even more items which it's actually deleting. Now, as I said, I don't hide any system files. So my dumb question is, what are those extra files that macOS 10 is telling me it's deleting when I only see one file in the trash can? I might have actually given you more work over the Christmas period. I hope not. Great show, Alison. Keep it up. Bye for now. And everybody, have a great Mac week.
Okay, Gaz, I don't think you actually know how to play this game. See, you're supposed to send in questions that are so dumb and so trivial that you're afraid to ask them. This is not the segment of the show where you send in a question that's too hard for me to answer. You're really not playing fair at all. I spent over a day searching the internets for even the vaguest reference to this question, and I came up empty. I did, however, learn a lot about the trash can. Like, did you know there's a separate one for each user? But I didn't find any clues at all to the answer to your question. I really wanted to conquer this one on my own, but it was clear I would have to bring in the big guns, so I broke down and I brought Bart into the problem. He did have a few ideas. First, he asked if you were using secure empty trash, because he says that actually deletes the same file three times. I think you gave us what did you say? You said six or eight, so I'm not sure the three times would actually work out, but that might be a root cause. He also reminded me that some files are actually folders that have other things inside them. For example, we've talked about how the iPhoto library is one big honkin' file, but if you right-click on it in Finder, you'll see an option to view package contents, and if you do that, you'll find all of your images and metadata files and lots of other stuff in there. Obviously, you're not throwing away your iPhoto library, but I was just kind of using that as an example. If you're throwing out package files that look like single files, they might show up as more than one thing being deleted. Other examples of files that look like one thing are GarageBand files, .app files, and even older versions of iWork can be the culprit. He also came up with another idea. He said if you're using a FAT32 drive or any other non-HFS Plus drive attached to your Mac, every file is actually two files. All of the stuff Windows doesn't understand is stored in a separate file that the Finder doesn't show. After all those great ideas, Bart did say he was probably missing some more ways this could happen. Now, the way I deal with this problem is I don't empty the trash, but say every month or so. Yeah, it literally really starts to stink after that long. But anyway, then there's like 126,473 files in it, so you couldn't possibly count them and tell whether it was right or wrong. Try that, Gaz, and turn off the show hidden file thing. Next time, I would like to see you come up with an easy question, would you? Like, how do I find a command in the OS X menus, or how do I put things in the left sidebar of Finder windows? Those qualify for Dumb Question Corner. Now, Gaz, you could learn from John Long on how to ask an appropriate dumb question. Here's one he sent in. Dear Allison, a dumb question. I got a new Mac Pro for Christmas and loaded all the stuff from my old machine to my new machine. When in iTunes on the new machine, I had to authorize a couple of things that I had purchased through Apple. It said that this was 5 of 5 computers. Oh, well, two of the computers I do not have anymore because they've been wiped and sold. Is there any way to deauthorize all of them and then authorize just the ones I still have? Will any of my data, songs, movies, TV shows be gone? Please help. I'm sure others will have this question because Mac sold well for the holidays. This is a great one, John, because it happens to so many people and there is an easy answer to it, so it totally fits in Dumb Question Corner. I don't think one single time I've sold a Mac have I remembered to deauthorize it before I sold it. On top of that, I swear, it counts to 5 faster than I authorize new machines. Now, ages ago, Apple was super snotty about this. You had to call them on the phone. I think you had to beg them and recite an anti-Microsoft chant in iambic pentameter, and only then would they deauthorize your computers. Now it turns out it's really easy. I put a link in the show notes to the Apple support article that describes it over at support.apple.com, and that gives you everything you ever wanted to know about iTunes authorization. If you do find that you've reached 5 authorizations, you can reset your authorization count by clicking Deauthorize All in the Account Information screen. To get there, though, it's a little tricky. First, click the iTunes Store in the menu on the left side of iTunes. If you're not signed into the store, click the Account button and enter your username and password. It's kind of lame, but you have to click the Account button again. Your user ID does appear on the button. Enter your password and then click View Account. Finally, in the account information window, you can click deauthorize all. Now, you're not going to lose any data. I mean, if you've already got the files or have been copied over and you deauthorize and then reauthorize, you're not going to have any trouble at all playing those songs and movies. You just can't play them until you authorize it. See, Gaz, how that's done? You pick a question lots of people have, but it's too embarrassing to ask because it seems like it should be easy. Got it? Try to do better next time, and if you have trouble, just check in with John Long and ask him whether it qualifies. Back by popular demand, we have Steve Sheridan here to do a review for us in an interactive method about his new video camera that his darling wife got him for Christmas. Hi, Steve.
How you doing today, Allison?
I'm doing okay. We're doing our first recorded with two mic setup. It's kind of exciting. We've been practicing, so we're going to give this a try.
Thanks for having me on your show, by the way.
You're welcome.
It's good not to be in the background, but to actually have my voice on.
Get to talk?
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure Rose will like to hear her darling Stevie P on the show, right? Well, so a little setup here. Steve, you already had a digital video camera before this, right? What did you have?
Yeah, I had a Panasonic PVGS180. It was my first digital video cam, standard def, of course. And it had...
I think I got you that 3 years ago Christmas.
Yeah, about 3 years ago now. And it served me pretty well as my first digital video camera. It had three CCDs. It recorded to mini DV tape.
Which we liked for a long time.
Yeah.
It failed in Hawaii last year. And
Yeah. Had one of our DV tapes go bad on us and lost some pretty good video.
Oh, all it was spinner dolphins flying out of the air next to us in an ATV ride.
That's all it was.
But anyway, it was a pretty good camera considering we only spent like $300 or $400 on it, I think, for a stopgap.
Yeah, and it served me well because it had a FireWire interface so I could pull video directly into iMovie. It was really convenient. It did the trick for a good 3 years.
Right. So I knew Steve wanted to get going into high def because he's crazy about high def. The audio's got to be wonderful. The video's got to be spectacular and everything. So I decided to get him one for Christmas, and I started investigating. But it turns out there are just like a million different options, and no camera seemed to have everything that I thought he wanted. So I created a little spreadsheet. I don't know, 5 or 6 cameras in there, and I had all different brands. I had Canons and Panasonics and all different kinds of, you know, not Sony because I hate that proprietary crap. But anyway, so I had that all set up. And I was looking at ones that were in the $500-$600 range. So I handed the decision process off to Steve to go do some more research. And how much was the camera you actually chose, Steve, for me to buy for you for Christmas?
Well, I'm not exactly sure of the price since it was a gift from you this Christmas, but I think it was a little more than your original price range.
It was $900 if I bought it through Amazon with no shipping, and I checked every price thing I could find to get it cheaper than that, but that was the minimum price. But you know what? I was ready to swallow that price because that was, you know, what my darling Stevie P wanted, right?
Luckily, I have a very generous wife.
Okay, so what do you think of the camera? Or what camera did you get, actually, we should say?
Well, that gets into the selection process. I started with your spreadsheet, which was a really good starting point. And the thing that I was looking for was to get rid of some of the motor drive noise that I was hearing with my old standard def camera.
That's something that Chuck would certainly, of Mac Voices, would resonate to, right, after some problems he's had with motor noise with his cameras, too.
Yeah, I do recall an incident he had with one of the Mac Roundtable recordings, but it wasn't that severe. It only popped up during really low audio level situations, so not all the time, but enough to annoy me. So I decided I wanted to go with a camera that recorded directly to SD cards, and therefore no motor, no tape, no disk drive noise involved, directly to solid state.
Now, those can go bad just like a tape can go bad, but at least it'll cost more money if they go bad. So that's always good. But we'll get into that.
Right, right. The other thing I was looking for was good low-light performance, recording, you know, in dark scenes and so forth.
You did a lot of indoor shooting.
Right, and some night shooting.
Family events.
So one of the other selection factors was to have a large sensor to pick up as much light as possible. So I was looking for... basically the largest sensor I could find within my extended price range.
No, you didn't go for three CCDs this time.
No.
Did any of them have that?
One had it, but I believe, as I recall, it recorded to tape or disk drive.
That's so what it was.
It was more important for me to get the SD.
That was what we kept finding. It was hard to find everything you wanted.
Right.
But the large sensor was something you could get with the one you chose.
Right. And most of the sensors were 1/4 or 1/4 inch CMOS. And the one I selected, the Canon HF S100, had a 1/2.6 inch sensor, which is
so significantly
larger,
bigger.
Right.
1/2.6 versus 1/4.
Right.
Okay.
It also had image stabilization, an accessory shoe, an audio input jack, which was really important because I wanted an external mic at some point. And it got
There's
good
that
reviews.
Chuck influence again.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chuck cost me even more money on this deal. You'll hear about that too, I think.
Thank you, Chuck.
So the HF S100 from Canon is the one you ended up with.
That's the one I ended up selecting.
And well, this wasn't the lightest either. It was a little heavier than some, but still pretty stinking light.
Yeah, I think it was 17 ounces on that order. That, I think that is with the battery pack. But that's
17 ounces. Wow.
Ounces, yes.
You sure it was that light? We'll have to double check that.
Yeah, I think it's 17 ounces.
Okay. So what do you think of the camera?
Overall, I love the camera. Just got back from a vacation in Mexico, which...
with your darling wife.
And family, extended family. So we got a good chance to really run the camera through its paces under many conditions, moving...
indoors, outdoors.
Yeah, right.
Candlelight.
Candlelight.
And now we didn't get dolphins this time, but you did get...
Get some whales.
Got
a lot of whales.
Jumping whales. We saw humpback whales flying out of the water. I mean, just amazing stuff.
A lot of breaching whales.
And we didn't lose that, right, Steve?
Nope. All on SD card.
And backed up to a hard drive.
Yep.
Okay, good.
So basically, I don't have the finished product from all of these high-def videos that I took, but I have been starting to process them on Final Cut Express. And, you know, of course, I can see the intermediate results and see the video quality in that processing. And I'm really pleased with it.
Okay.
The high-def picture quality is excellent.
Now, you didn't actually do it on the highest definition possible. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm still coming to grips with what those different speeds are, but I think they are not resolutions, but the bit rate that it stores.
Okay.
And that, I believe, is indicative of the encoding scheme that it's using to store.
Oh, so not whether it's HD or not.
Correct.
Because it was things like SP, like the old-fashioned...
slow play and long play and so forth.
Yeah.
And it went all the way to some highest quality, which I think ended up being 17-some megabits per second video rate.
Okay, so you still have to mess around with some options on that. Maybe you need to tape the same thing 14 times and check them all next to each other.
I've done a couple comparisons, but I have, as of yet, to actually...
settle in.
Yeah.
Okay. So what about low light performance? Because that was one of the things you were really looking for with that huge sensor.
So as I said, although I'm pleased with the video quality and the resolution and so forth, the low light performance is not as good as I expected.
It's not as good as the one you had, the 3CCD standard def, right?
Right.
It was brighter in low light.
The other one, the standard def, was somewhat brighter.
But a lot fuzzier.
A lot fuzzier.
The high def is looking better.
Right. And I won't say it's poor, but I expected better performance, and I think that may be the difference between the 3CCD of the standard def and this larger but single sensor, high def sensor.
Okay. All right. So it's not bad, though. How does it feel in your hand? That's always really important.
Fantastic form factor. It fits very nicely in my hand. It's very lightweight. Buttons are all in logical places. It's got a very clean, compact-looking design.
It actually, when you look at this thing, it looks like a giant lens. Like,
yeah.
the entire camera is the diameter of the lens. It's like 3 inches across. This thing is huge.
Yeah, I mean, although the lens isn't that large, the opening appears that large.
Right, so when you look in the end of the camera, it's all lens you're looking at.
Yeah.
What about the menus?
Very good menus. They're easy to navigate. You can find the function you need pretty easily. As I said, I used the camera for a week in Mexico. I haven't really read the manual yet.
Who needs a stinking manual?
So, but, you know, if the menus weren't fairly self-explanatory, you'd find yourself digging into the manual. And I haven't felt the need to do that much. I've looked up a couple things.
Now, Lindsay and I have both used, and actually you have one too, a small point-and-shoot Canon PowerShot, and the menus are very similar to that.
Yes.
The opening menu is a little different, but then you go into this secondary level menus, and it acts just like the Canon cameras, where you got a row of menus down the side, or a column, and then a row of them across the bottom, and it's flipping between them. So, I think the fact that we've gotten used to Canons can help too.
I'm still getting used to some of the menu options, but they're, like I said, they're pretty straightforward.
Okay. Any kind of advanced features that surprised you?
The face detection was very good, and this feature allows you to track faces within an image area, the existing image area, and automatically will set the exposure and the control. Color control to the subject's face. That
so it's like
distracting.
It's doing an auto exposure thing, but definitely related to faces because it gets these boxes up on screen, right?
And those boxes follow the face wherever it moves.
So it'll follow more than one face?
Yeah, it actually has a secondary box with a lighter box around it.
I think I've seen that on point-and-shoot cameras, too, where it'll show you boxes that it's recognizing this is a face.
Right. I haven't figured out how to switch back and forth between primary and secondary faces yet. But
okay. How about the display?
Really good 2.7-inch color LCD display. Very bright, very sharp and crisp, much more so than the display I had in my old camera.
Now, I'm going to actually jump you to one of the negatives. There's no viewfinder on this camera.
Yeah, that is one of the downsides. Without a viewfinder, you have to use that display to do any shooting, any video capture.
Now, you used to rely on that to save battery power.
Yeah.
How is the battery power on this one?
Well, it seems pretty good. I didn't notice it draining faster than my other cameras. I think I got about 2 hours plus.
On the big one?
With the big battery. And
okay.
And that was with a lot of recording.
Oh, God, does he do a lot of recording. I'm serious. Like, we're sitting in the bus to go into town. He's recording. You know, we're tying our shoelaces. He's recording. We have amazing family videos. We'll show them to you later.
Quite interesting.
Fascinating.
The other thing, of course, one of the reasons I bought it was to get rid of the motor drive noise. So no noise at all. Very clean
nice.
Background. I don't detect any extraneous noise. So big plus on recording to SD card, and getting rid of that noise problem that I had.
That is a mechanical, you know, anytime you can eliminate a mechanical device, you're reducing failure mechanisms as well. I mean, you tend to then just have logic failure that you can't possibly get fixed. But.
Yeah, but a solid state kind of failure versus a mechanical, which are less frequent typically.
Right. Now you're super anal about sound.
Yeah, I am, unfortunately, but this has very good sound quality through the normal mic input, stereo mic inputs. It picked up the sounds very well, close and fairly distant, good stereo separation. It also has a mini shoe, as I mentioned, and an input for audio, so we can attach an external mic.
This is where Chuck comes in again. I think he recommended the Rode. It's a Rode mount camera. We'll put a link in the show notes to it. A Rode microphone that mounts to a mini jack. Mounts to a regular shoe, which of course meant I was allowed to spend money on the microphone, but also a little accessory that gets you from the mini jack to the full size jack.
Or, you bet.
Or mount, I should call it. It's the connecting mount, not the audio jack.
So that mic, although it is very nice, it's almost as large as the camera. So I think I'll use that only in those situations where I really need to get sound from a distance.
I got to tell you, it actually looks pretty comical. It's like this, like somebody with a giant hat on their head.
Yeah.
Or something.
And then it comes with this muffler that looks like a
treble. No, it looks like a treble. It is the funniest looking thing. I think you should really. In fact, this treble is so big, if you put it on the mic, it actually hangs down in front of the lens. So
yeah, it's a rather furry muffler.
We should get some pictures of that in the show notes.
Right. So I although I've used that, I haven't done the sound comparison yet with the standard.
Right. I didn't let him have that before Mexico because I figured if I let him have it, he'd use it. And that would be embarrassing in Hawaii.
So. Had to hold that on.
Now, we'll use that in Macworld.
You bet. Because we'll have long distance sound there we have to handle.
Right. Maybe filming the Macworld, the Mac roundtable at Macworld.
You bet.
That would be
good. Chuck hasn't beat me to the punch.
Chuck. It's always back to Chuck. Now, there was a little added bonus you found in this
camera. Yeah, the still camera, the built-in still camera is very nice. It's an 8-megapixel camera. It shoots very good still photos. It's got an excellent pop-up flash that's generally concealed but pops up only when needed. I think because it's HD, the lens quality is a little better than your standard def cameras, and therefore the stills come out better too. And in addition to the high-resolution pictures, you get some pretty good.
Now, it has a built-in flash.
Quality.
We did notice one weirdness. He was taking a picture of his mother or father, I think, and a guy in a white shirt walked by, and you can actually see some ghosting of the guy's white shirt. I don't quite understand how the guy moved in the time that the flash was going off, but that was a little interesting.
Yeah.
But it, definitely much better quality than anything you've had before. In a camcorder.
In a camcorder.
I think the other
still.
One did, and you had to do all this goofy switching to get it to work and that sort of thing.
But this is convenient. It's just a rotation of a knob and a special button for stills versus video.
Oh, good, good. Now, when we were in Hawaii, he was able to plug the camera into the TV. What's the cable that came with it?
A composite cable with a stereo output.
So that actually worked really well. And when it came up on screen, it was really cool. It was one of the inputs to the TV. We flipped the inputs on the TV, and it showed a tab for video and a tab for photos. So you could switch between. It was like it had its own little interface somehow that it was driving to the TV. It was, that was pretty slick.
And it has a remote control, which allows for convenient control when you're watching the big display.
So imagine you go on vacation with Steve, you go out for the day, you do stuff, he makes you go back to the room and watch what you did that same day.
No, I wasn't. It was only that the people wanted to see and relive the experience.
Desperately
of the day.
Wanted to see themselves tying their shoelaces. No, actually, we had done some zip lining and some of the family wasn't there, so it was kind of fun to go back and relive that.
Yeah, that's always fun.
Now, it's not all rosy. Unlike Bart, you started with the stuff you like, but we'll go with some cons here.
Yeah, probably the number one is it doesn't come with everything one might expect a video camera to come with.
It doesn't come with anything.
Well, not much.
No, it came with a composite cable.
Yes.
And the remote.
Yes.
It didn't come with a battery charger. It didn't come
one
with
that, one that could charge batteries external. You could charge if it were on the camera.
Yeah. So, but that's not real useful. I mean, that leaves your camera dead the whole time. It didn't come with a second battery, which I can understand that. That's okay. The one that really irritated me, it didn't come with any SD cards at all. Not any.
Yeah.
Not even a teeny little stupid one that you would never use, you know.
Right.
So like the day he got it, he couldn't play with it.
And these things are not cheap. Especially
okay.
the type you
remember,
need for this camera.
I started at $500. We ended up with the camera at $900. Bought the charger was $100. The second battery was another $100. But the SD cards, we thought, okay, well, it takes 32 gig cards. Go get a couple of those bad boys, right?
Yeah, why not?
But it turns out you need some kind of high-speed cards for
class
some reason.
Four.
Class 4 or higher. Guess how much those are, guys? 32 gig card, $400.
Just a drop in the bucket.
Needless to say, we did not get a 32 gig card. I got them two 16 gig cards, but those were still, I thought I was getting off lucky at this point. They were only $100 a piece.
Yeah. Hey, but we got to record to something.
Yeah. So basically, we added $400 to the price of the original, $400 or $500 to the price of the original device when we got it.
Right. But I think it ended up being worth it.
But no, I was surprised. So 7 days on this trip, plus some Christmas vacation stuff, you only filled one of the 16 gig cards.
Yeah, and I didn't quite fill it. I think I ended up using about 3/4 of it.
And
now,
yet,
it was not at the highest bit rate.
He was. Okay, right. But so he brought his MacBook Air along with him to dump the video off onto, but it's an older MacBook Air with like a 60 gig hard drive.
Right,
so that was going to work. So I got him that was the other $100.
Right.
I got him an external 500 gig portable drive. So, and cha-ching. And so he dumped the video onto that. So that 16 gig of video, or not quite 16 gig, turned into how much on that hard drive?
Turned out to be a little over 300 gigabytes.
So it's somehow, when it's in that format, what is the format it records on?
AVCHD.
Okay. And apparently that's some sort of compressed format.
Apparently it is.
Because when it squirts out, 16 gig turns into 300 gig.
Right.
So is that a bad thing or?
Well, I think that's something you just live with when you convert to HD. It's either that or tape.
Mm-hmm.
But even so, tape you've got to download at some point and get into a processing format, and it's going to expand there too.
Right. Now, is it quick to get the video off, or does it have to go through some sort of encoding process to squirt from 16 gig to 300 gig?
No, it's faster than real time. I mean, it's not instantaneous, but, a minute worth of tape, I think, takes maybe 40 seconds to download.
Okay. No, but how about, you mean a minute worth of SD takes 40 seconds to download?
A minute worth of HD takes about 40 seconds to download into Final Cut Express.
Okay. Oh, wait a minute. Final Cut Express. So it doesn't work with iMovie HD, and Steve hates iMovie 08
because it doesn't
iMovie
accept that format, that AVC HD format.
So he had to use Final Cut Express, which was okay because I had already bought him that a couple of years ago. But guess what happened when he went to use it?
Well, I had Final Cut Express 3.5, which doesn't have the right
codecs
to take in AVC HD format.
So what did we have to do? We had to buy an upgrade. That was the last $100.
But I needed to do that anyway. I needed Final Cut Express 4.
Oh, yeah, you really did.
Of course.
All right. So enough about the money. What about things like Zoom and that sort of stuff?
Zoom was another bit of a con.
Maybe?
Yeah, a trade-off, we'll call it. It has 10:1 zoom, and that's a little less than I was used to the 15:1 on my previous camera. Not bad, though. 10:1 is quite adequate. What I was more surprised by was zooming back to the farthest wide angle setting was still fairly narrower than I was expecting.
Hmm.
I found myself wanting to back up, physically back up to get an entire scene in. when normally my previous cameras could take an entire scene because of its wider angle at the lowest zoom setting.
Okay.
So that was a little bit disappointing, but something I think I can get used to.
You can get used to it. Yeah, it's just different. And it wasn't quite as big of a zoom either. It's a 10X
versus 15 to 1. Yeah, some are 20, but...
Yeah, nobody wants to look that close up anyway.
Right. So image stabilization is important, and it does have that and seems to work pretty well.
Oh, good, good.
The high zoom. The other kind of odd thing, which I'm not used to, all video cameras I've had a light on the front, which tells the subject when you're recording, a little red light that comes on when you record and turns off.
So we know when
you're
irritating us, basically.
Right. Now, there is no light on this camera to tell the subject when they're being recorded. So I guess that's a pro or a con, depending on whether you want that subject to know you're recording.
So there might be some stuff recorded I don't even know about at this point.
You'll find out later.
All right. Let's see. So bottom line it for us, Steve. What do you think?
Overall, really like the camera. I'm very happy with it. I would recommend it to those people who do care about extraneous noise in environments that have low audio levels. If price is a real driver for you and you aren't that sensitive to a motor drive noise, I would consider other HD cameras, possibly those that have disc or tape drive options. There are certainly cheaper options for cameras that record to SD cards as well. But overall, this one, I think, pretty much meets my needs with a few.
I sure hope so. I told Steve at this point, this thing better make me look a lot thinner for how much money it costs. And Bart said, well, tell him to film it in 16:9 and then export it as 4:3.
I'll have to find that feature in Final Cut Express.
And only when I'm on screen.
Right. Or maybe the portion that you're on the screen.
Exactly. All right, Steve. Well, I appreciate you coming on the air and giving us this review. I hope people enjoyed this.
Well, thanks for having me on your show, Allison, and I'll be sure to stay subscribed.
Well, I had a lot of fun doing that with Steve. I hope you enjoyed that little episode. On Christmas Day, my friend Diane was talking about an emerging idea, this crazy idea of doctors who actually do house calls. Isn't that nuts? Why didn't we think of that before? Jeez. Anyway, as she was talking about this, I realized that that's actually what Honda Bob does. Honda Bob does house calls. Maybe we should call them garage calls. Anyway, he comes to tend to your sickly Honda or Acura cars right in your very own driveway. He fixes their ills, causes less damage to your pocketbook than most places, and leaves your cars running smoothly and safely. He'll even do well baby checkups. Instead of inoculations, he changes fluids and gaskets and that sort of thing to prevent mishaps that could cost you more money. If you live in the LA or Orange County areas and would like to have a house call, give Honda Bob a call at 562-531-2321 or send him an email at hdabob@aol.com. HDA Bob's mobile service is not affiliated with Honda Acura or Honda Worldwide. Well, it's that time of the show again. It's time for an exciting episode of Chit Chat Across the Pond with Bart Bouchatz. Bart, I have missed you.
I missed you too. So I had to do a whole show on my own.
All that work. Was it hard?
It takes a surprisingly long time, and probably because I'm so completely out of practice at this kind of thing. I think it took me about 4 hours in total.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, bad internet helps a bit with that time, as does the fact that my machine is old, so whenever it came to transcoding and it was like slow.
But you got a lot of help from the listeners, that's for sure.
Oh, that was fantastic. Thank you very much to everyone who sent in stuff. That really made my life so much easier.
I was telling Bart earlier, I messed up. I had planned to save George's for me so that I would have some meat for this week, because I got nothing. I haven't started writing this show yet, and it's Saturday already.
It's a whole day. It'll be fine.
Yeah. Not a problem. All right. So let's see. We have one item under security light, I think.
Yeah, which you came up with. Well, it sort of pops up every time you log into your WordPress blog. There's a new version of WordPress out, version 2.9, so update.
It appears to have some fun goodies from what I was reading, but I forget what they were. They were tremendously important, I'm sure.
While they were writing about it being in beta, I remember thinking, oh, that's kind of cool. So when I update, I'll probably go, oh, yeah, that's what it was that was cool.
All right, but does it have security updates as well?
I don't know. I just kind of assumed it does. We should perhaps point out to the listeners that I have been taking an RSS holiday, so I have not been reading my feeds.
Ah.
Because I actually want a bit of peace and quiet over Christmas, and when you subscribe to so many feeds, it takes up a lot of brain space.
So you have to go cold turkey.
So I have no idea what's going on in the world.
Okay, so there could be some massive denial of service attack.
Yeah, the whole internet could have exploded.
We
wouldn't know.
As long as Skype works. And Twitter. We're okay.
Yeah, Skype, Twitter, and Adium are all okay. That's all I know.
All right, well, you have a pretty cool topic for today, something I don't know anything about, so I'm flying blind here, so why don't you set us up?
Okay, well, I've had a bit of an adventure getting my hands on a Christmas tree this year. And after all the adventuring, I figured I'd like to get a nice photograph of it. And then that led me into the whole, well, how do you get a nice photograph of a Christmas tree? Which I guess is the real topic, but depending on how much of the adventure you want to hear.
I want to hear the adventure, because the last thing you said that I saw when I was in Mexico was that you went to get a Christmas tree and they were all gone. So I don't know how you even ended up with a Christmas tree.
Well,
and more importantly, how you would get a Christmas tree home on your mountain bike.
Yeah, obviously not is the answer to that question. No, I don't like having Christmas trees up too early because I think that ruins Christmas. It drives me so mad that, you know, at Halloween they rip down the witches and they stick up the Santies, and I think it's horrible. Christmas is supposed to be special, so you're not supposed to have the decorations up for a month. It's not a 12th of the year.
Well, especially since they used to put them up after Thanksgiving. At least they would start, you know, putting out the cards. But now it's like a little bit after Memorial Day, I think, these days. So.
Yeah, so traditionally in our family, and it may be a Belgian tradition. It may just be that our family's weird. But the Christmas tree would go up on Christmas Eve.
Oh, and then it would that's stay up, really late.
Yeah, and then it would stay up until Little Christmas, which is January 6th.
January 6th is Little Christmas?
Yeah, or in Belgium, it's the Feast of the Three Wise Men.
I've never heard of that.
So in Belgium, basically, you go out in groups of three, you dress up, usually involving some rather un-PC boot polish on your face. You take a large star and stick it to a stick, you put on some robes, and you head out and you go singing around the neighborhood, raising money.
For?
Yourself. Oh. It's like Halloween, like trick or treat, only three kings.
Okay.
So that's in Belgium, that's the traditional end of the Christmas season. So you go out and you sing for the three kings, so that you're celebrating them arriving at the crib, and then you take everything there.
And get some money. Okay.
Yeah, and so school would never restart before Little Christmas was over.
Ah, okay.
So, you know, I didn't want to put up my Christmas tree ages in advance. So I figured, okay, the Sunday before Christmas is a good time to go and get my Christmas tree. So off I went down to the local supermarket where they had loads and loads of Christmas stuff a few weeks ago. Nothing.
Oh.
Not a bubble to be had.
There's still Christmas trees up today in the lots.
Well, there's no fake Christmas trees to be had, because I wanted a fake one, because that way there's no crap on the ground.
Oh, fake tree.
And then you can reuse it. It's kind of more economically sound.
It doesn't smell good.
There is that. I'll grant you that.
But, all right.
So I did the rounds of all the supermarkets. Not anywhere in the entire town of Maynooth was there a fake Christmas tree to be had.
Wow.
So I got quite grumpy, and I think I mentioned in my recording with Lola last week that I was going to have a Christmas tree-less Christmas. But then I figured, no, I don't really want to do that. So I kept looking around, and I found a guy who does real Christmas trees. That was all he did. And he delivered.
Oh.
Most important. Actually, no, before that, I went to christmastrees.ie, who had ads on the radio. And I rang them on Monday morning, and they went, oh, we stopped delivering. And when I came home, they still had the ads on the radio on Tuesday.
Ah.
That's great. You know, have a website, set it all up, have really nice trees there. There was one called the Apartment Christmas Tree, and it looked perfect. And then don't sell it to me. Thanks a bunch. And keep advertising at me. Genius. So anyway, that made me cranky.
Okay.
But then I think it was on Tuesday evening. So this, you know, 2 days had gone by at this stage. On Tuesday evening, I was just cycling down Main Street in Maynooth, and there was a guy standing there selling Christmas trees, and I just said to him, look, I don't suppose you deliver. And he said, actually, I do, assuming it's local. I said, yeah, no, it's just up the road. I said, okay, yeah, that's fine. So it was dark, and I decided to pick my Christmas tree in the dark and in the outside.
Okay.
Which means you have no real reference for size.
You can't tell how tall they are compared to, say, you?
Well, I guess I misjudged how much difference there is between me and the roof. Well, I thought I had chosen a small tree.
Okay.
Because I asked the guy, you know, do you have any small trees? And he led me over to a tree, and it was a nice tree. And it was one of these modern species that don't shed, and it was just a nice tree. So I said, yeah, that looks about right size-wise. So I said, sure, I'll take that one. So I did. And he delivered it and dragged it into the sitting room, and I suddenly realized I was going to have to rearrange every bit of furniture in the house because the thing was bloody huge. Luckily, I have I think it's about 3 inches to spare from the ceiling, maybe two.
How big is this tree?
Well, from the ground up to 3 inches away from my ceiling.
Of course, I don't know how high your ceiling is, Bart.
Normal height?
Normal, okay.
It's about a foot above the door frame.
Okay, and the door frame would fit like a 6'5" man could walk through?
Well, yeah, I think door frames are a standard height, aren't they?
I don't know. You have whole entire holidays I've never heard of. Who knows how big? I mean, you might have little troll doorways for all I know, like a hobbit doors or something.
They look the same when I visited the States. So oh, okay. The same.
All right. I'll have Justin Byrne is going to be here. I think he's here today, actually, and we're going to get together. Oh. I'll have him talk to me about the height of the doorways.
Excellent.
Do some research.
So I got the thing set up after rearranging all my furniture, which made the cat really angry. Cats do not take well to change.
Oh.
He actually attacked the Christmas tree.
Who won?
Well, I did. The cat has now been banned from the sitting room until the Christmas tree is gone, so he has to sit out in the cold.
Aww.
It's not my fault. His fault. So I put up the tree, and then I went to hang decorations. But of course, I didn't have decorations for a big tree. I had decorations for a little tree.
Okay.
So when I finished putting in everything I had, it looked so ridiculous. There was nothing in it. So then, of course, none of the supermarkets were selling any Christmas stuff anymore, but eventually I found a little pound shop. And luckily they still... They're sort of a thing we have around here where they sell cheap stuff.
Oh, okay. All right.
It used to be a pound shop.
Because a dollar store.
Yeah, a dollar store. That kind
there
of thing.
We go. Okay, I got you.
And I literally cleaned the guy out of his last baubles and got some tinsel as well. And 200 lights, 100 white, 100 colored.
Ah.
And then I was set.
Okay.
So all this took until Wednesday. So basically it was starting on Sunday until Wednesday until I actually had my tree up. So
I have to tell you, Lindsay and her boyfriend got a Christmas tree and they don't have anything yet because they're college students. So they took out of every case of beer they opened, they cut out the label and then on cardboard and then they used red paper clips to hang them to the tree.
That could be quite nice. A very student-y tree.
Yeah, it actually looks pretty cute. I kind of like it. It was funny.
Different. Excellent. I didn't think of that. I just went with traditional. So red, silver, and gold baubles.
Nice.
Varying in both glass and matte. So you have 6 different things.
Quite creative.
Yeah, I thought so. Anyway, so my tree was all nice. But having gone through all that hassle, I figured I might like to take a photograph of it because this tree has been quite the adventure.
Right.
So it's not easy to take a photograph of a Christmas tree.
We all try.
Yeah, as I'm sure everyone has tried.
They work, but they're boring. You never look at it and go, oh, wow.
Well, yeah, but you look at the real Christmas tree and you go, oh, that's cool. And you look at the picture and you go, meh.
Yeah.
It's a tree. I can see it's a tree, but
has lights on it. Yeah.
So I had in the back of my mind, I had a memory of something called the Orton effect, which I had sort of skied away in the back of my head for, you know, whenever I actually find a use for this, I must look it up again. And what the Orton effect does is it creates a very dreamlike effect because it actually combines a soft focus photograph with a sharp focus photograph to create a shot that's both soft and sharp at once.
Hmm. Okay.
So it's very dreamlike. It's fuzzy and yet all the detail is there. And
now, I have an advantage to the listeners because I've actually seen what he's talking about. I've seen the effect at the end, but I haven't. But I don't know how he gets there.
So the, you know, that sort of dreamlike effect actually sets off a Christmas tree very well, and it adds that bit of interest that is just completely lacking normally.
It came out beautiful. So yeah, So it's sort of fuzzy and like you've spread Vaseline on the lens kind of the thing in the old days.
Yeah.
And then, but crisp and sharp on the bulbs.
It's crisp and sharp at the same time. It's not just on the bulb. If you look at everything, every needle on the Christmas tree is still there. Every detail is still there. And yet it looks as if you smeared Vaseline on the lens. And it's like, oh, what? So before we get as far as Ortonizing, I've just made that word up. But anyway, before we get to Orton, we should probably start with actually taking a picture that's worthy of Ortoning.
Okay.
You are going to need a tripod. Or some
way,
be it a gorilla pod, anything to hold the camera steady. You want to get a nice picture of the tree with the lights on, and the only way to do that is to turn the lights in the room off.
Right.
So then you have a tree and some fairy lights, and that's the only source of light in the room.
Right. Okay.
That's going to mean, basically, there's almost no light. So
sure.
You're going to have a long exposure. And a long exposure means you need to hold the camera still.
You could
stick your f1.4 lens on it. But I ran into two problems with that. Number one, at 30 millimeters, I had to get so far back, I was sort of sitting in the couch.
Okay, so you didn't do the fast lens.
That's one problem. And the other problem is you're not going to get the whole tree in focus.
Oh, right. Because the aperture is going to be wide open.
Yeah, so you have a paper-thin depth of field. So I actually just used my standard 18 to 50 millimeter lens at about 40 millimeters. That worked out nice. No, it wasn't 40. It was less than 40, but 20. Anyway, it was wider open than the 30mm lens. And then just about f4 is sort of a normal enough f-stop. So it lets in a fair bit of light, but isn't, the whole tree is still sharp.
Okay.
But what that means is that the exposure goes down to 1.3 seconds.
Oh, wow.
Which yeah. I challenge you to
I'd call a tripod if you don't want to see your heartbeat in the lights.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't have to be anything fancy. You can pile a couple of books on the floor and rest the camera on the books. I mean, something that the camera can sit there still. The other thing you should do, because this is obviously low light, as in there's just a Christmas tree. So if you use a high ISO, you're going to get noise and it's going to be horrible.
Yeah, I don't ever see why to ever use a high ISO.
Sport.
Hmm.
You have to keep your shutter speed short in sport.
Right.
And the light is often not great, so your only choice is to, you open up the aperture as much as you can, but that's only going to get you so far. You're going to have to go to higher ISOs.
Hmm. Okay. Never did that in cross country, but I just got bad pictures when the light got low. Maybe that was why.
Well, there we go.
Okay. Shut up. All right, back to the Orton.
So, tripod. What also helps a lot is a remote shutter release, because you don't want camera shake. But don't worry if you don't have one. If you set the camera to a timed exposure where it waits 10 seconds, then you can push the button with your big clumsy finger and shake the camera all you want. By the time it actually takes the picture, it'll have settled down again.
Oh, I never thought of doing that. Do you have a remote release for your Nikon?
I do. I have the infrared remote, which is really cool.
Oh, you have to tell me about that. I don't have that.
Yeah, I believe the model number is L3, and I picked it up on Amazon for $29.
Oh, wow.
And it's just it's one button. It's a teeny little remote that has one button, and you click, and the shutter goes.
And it automatically works with the Nikon D40?
Yeah, you just have to go in, and you set the shooting mode from single frame to remote.
Oh.
And then it listens to the remote. And you can also set remote delay 2 seconds if you want to take pictures of a group, and you want to have time to get the remote out of the shot.
Oh, wow.
So you can stand into the group, get everyone to smile, click, hide the remote, and then it'll take the picture.
I need that. Okay.
Good. Okay, so you need to take the picture in such a way that the camera isn't shaking, because otherwise it's going to be fuzzy no matter the fact that you use a tripod or a pile of books or whatever you use to hold the camera. The next thing you're not going to like.
What?
You need to set the camera in full manual.
Okay.
Right, the auto exposure is going to get horribly confused because it's going to try average the scene out to 18% grey. And the auto white balance is just not going to have a clue what to do with this.
Okay.
Because these things are all designed for typical scenes, and a Christmas tree in a dark room is not typical in any way.
Gotcha.
So, set the camera in full manual mode, set the ISO down to 200, set the white balance to incandescent, which on the D40 is an icon that looks like a light bulb.
I should be able to figure that out.
And then manually set the aperture to 4 or 5 or something around that ballpark.
Right.
And then ignore the light meter and just pick a random exposure and take the shot and see whether you need to go up or down.
Okay. But you said it was more than a second, right?
For me, it was 1.3 seconds got me.
So I should probably not start at like 1/240th or something, right? it'll take a little while to get there.
Well, you can go on big jumps if you're way off. When you do get what you think is right, bracket it either side because the little screen is very hard to judge on. So take what you think looks right and then take one brighter and one darker. And then when you get to the computer, one of those three is going to be right.
Okay.
And then you have your raw materials.
Oh, and by the way, am I shooting in RAW?
You don't have to, but if you shoot in RAW, you can bracket a bit more loosely.
By the way, I shot everything in Mexico in RAW, and now I want to ask you questions later about how to fix my photos that didn't come out.
Oh, perfect. I look forward to that. Probably the only person in the world to say that, but there we go.
All right, so you just take this one picture, maybe bracket on either side for the...
Just to be sure, yeah.
And you're saying, and that's just changing the speed, the shutter speed.
Exposure, yeah.
Okay.
So you've set the aperture and you leave that alone and you just change the exposure. So you get what you need.
Okay.
Then use whatever you like to get it off your camera and onto your computer. I happen to use aperture. Mm-hmm. Use iPhoto, it doesn't matter. Use something, get it off the camera. Maybe do a couple of basic tweaks, maybe give it a bit of a crop. In my case, I didn't like this 4:3 aspect ratio, so I cropped it to 4:2. Sorry, I didn't like the 2:3, so I cropped it to 4:3. And I gave it a few minor tweaks of the exposure and just a little bit of vibrancy because I love that vibrancy slider.
It's addictive, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great. So, you know, just a few minor tweaks in whatever your favorite software is, whatever you'd normally do to a photograph, just to give it a little tweak. If that's nothing, then fair enough, do nothing. Then you want to get it off into a pixel editor. And what I mean by that is an editor like Photoshop, but I actually used Pixelmator because Pixelmator is cheap.
You said something that has layers.
Layers. Layers are the key.
And a little bit of, and some effects that you can do on those layers.
Layers and blend. All you need is layers, the ability to change the blending mode of the layers, and the ability to apply a Gaussian blur.
Hmm. Okay. Saturation or anything like that necessary?
Nothing else.
All right.
Those three things are all you need.
Okay.
So that means that you can do it in the GIMP, you can do it in Pixelmator, you can do it in Photoshop. I don't know much about Elements, but I have read on the internet that you can do it in Elements.
Oh, sure. So oh, sure. Maybe I'll try it in Acorn, too, to see if it works there.
That's a good way. I have no idea whether or not it'll work in Acorn, but again, definitely worth a try. So you open it up in your editor of choice. In my case, I chose Pixelmator. Like I say, I like Pixelmator because it does more than Elements, but it costs less than Elements.
Always good.
And it's still evolving, so whatever new version, it gets a little bit closer to Photoshop. Now, that's not to say it is exactly Photoshop. It's still quite some way back, but it's actually very powerful. And it uses Apple's Core Graphics, so it's really, really quick.
Yeah, I do like that.
You don't need to preview your effects. It just applies the effects on the real image, and it uses all of the grunt of your graphics card to do it, which is very pleasant.
I just double-checked. Acorn definitely does blending layers and has Gaussian blur. So
there we go. Acorn again is a choice. That's also a cheap choice.
Yes.
Okay. So you suck your picture into, in my case, Pixelmator. And the first thing you do is you duplicate the layer that it came in on twice. So you just right-click, duplicate layer, right-click, duplicate layer. In fact, the only palette you're going to need is the layers palette. You can get rid of all the other ones that are just in your way. So duplicate it twice.
Got it.
Then on the very top layer, click that one. Go down to where it lets you set the blending mode and set the blending mode to screen.
Hmm. Okay. What does that mean?
It's a way of combining the two layers, which has the effect of amplifying the image effectively. So you end up with something that looks overexposed, but not in a linear way. It's not that it's blown out all the brights. The brights are still very bright, but it's sort of multiplying.
Well, but they have a multiply.
It's not
too.
Multiply. No, multiply comes in later. Multiply is different.
And the only the only layer it's affecting is the one directly below it. It's not affecting the bottom layer yet because we started on the top layer and it's affecting the
middle. Started on the top layer. Yeah, the very bottom layer, in fact, is just going to be there to keep our original in case we need to go back to it.
Oh,
I like to work non-destructively, which is why I just keep that bottom layer and just leave it alone.
I see. Okay.
So it affects the layer below it, and it basically it combines the two layers to give you an overexposed version of the image.
Okay.
But overexposed in a nice way, not just by ramping up the brightness slider.
Okay.
And you then need to select both of those layers, so you hold down the shift key and click both, and you merge them together. So you just right-click and go merge layers.
Okay, that's the way it is in PixelMaker. Sometimes it's merge down.
Merge down. If you have a merge down option, then select the top layer and it'll merge it into the one below it. That's also perfectly fine.
Okay.
Then at this stage, I like to rename my layers so that things don't get confusing. Mm-hmm. So I named the bottom layer original, which on Pixelmator, you just double click the name and then a text box comes up and you type in the name and you hit OK.
Okay.
And then the top layer, which we made out of our two layers, I call sharp because that's going to be our sharp focus layer. Duplicate that top layer again. Rename it to soft focus.
So the top one is SoftFocus, and the middle one is now Sharp.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And the bottom one is Original, and we leave that alone.
All right.
So with the top layer selected, go to Filter, Blur, Gaussian Blur, and I think that's exactly the same in Photoshop.
And that's exactly the same in Pixelmator. Yeah. I'm sorry, in Acorn.
Okay. So blur it.
Mm-hmm.
And the blur radius you need to set yourself. The actual number is going to depend on the resolution of your photograph. But what you want to do is slide it up so that it gets blurrier to the point where all the detail is gone, but the shapes are still discernible.
Okay.
Which, for a 6-megapixel camera, works out at a radius of about 20.
Wow.
So it's pretty blurry, but you can still make out that it's a Christmas tree. It just looks like someone smeared a lot of Vaseline on the lens.
Okay.
And then just click OK on that. So now you have your three layers. With the top one selected, your soft focus layer, change the blend mode to multiply.
Ah, now what does multiply mean?
It takes the values in each layer, and the resulting image is the multiplication of the values of the two layers. So pixel by pixel, it does a multiplication of the values.
So if it's a one in each,
the pixel values. So you have values from 0 to 255.
Oh, okay.
It multiplies them together.
Okay.
Because an image is just a grid of numbers, effectively. So it multiplies the numbers together. And that's it. You're done. As soon as you do that blend mode to multiply, it'll just pop out at you and it'll be your Orton image.
Interesting. I can't wait to try that on a good picture. I did it on a stupid picture that I just happened to have open. It's a picture of my Mobile Me license number.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's going to have the nice effect. It works particularly well if you have a shot with like rays of sunlight or something. It'll bring those out very nice. So if you had a forest with light, a shaft of light coming through the trees, or any sort of evening scene with nice soft light, it tends to work quite well with. And also with your Christmas tree, because you have bright lights and dark stuff.
Yeah, I've got a couple of good pictures this would be fun with.
And it really is that simple.
So the effect, now you put in on your blog post, which we'll have a link over to instead of duplicating everything on mine, you've got a link over to your to the picture that you started with and how it came out.
Yeah. And I've also done a screencast of the process.
Hot dogs. Yeah. I resisted the temptation to watch that first.
Okay, well, it's up on Vidler, and you can embed it into the show notes.
Great.
And it's in my blog post as well, anyway. And then I also did a screen steps tutorial.
Ah! And where's that?
That is linked to my blog post.
Okay.
So I did it as a PDF, because I don't like how it sticks stuff into WordPress. I much prefer to have a PDF and just link to it.
Really? Oh, I love how it puts it into WordPress.
It depends on your theme.
Oh. Well, now that I have a new modern theme.
Yeah, I just prefer a PDF. That way its styling is irrelevant.
Yeah, and it is kind of nice for people to have that, just be able to save that document too.
Well, yeah, exactly, because it's quite difficult to save a web page in a useful way, and then you end up with my sidebars and stuff.
Right.
Whereas if it's PDF, you just have what you need, and you can print it out without wasting all of your ink.
Yeah, I don't print anything.
You can.
I could if I wanted to, but I don't.
Exactly. So I think that's everything there. Just to mention that this effect was named after the photographer who invented it, and it goes back long before we had digital. Basically, he would set up a tripod and take two slide photographs of the same subject, one of which that was overexposed and out of focus, and one of which that was overexposed and in focus, and then sandwich the two together, and the result is this kind of spooky, ethereal image.
Hmm.
And it's called after him, the Horton effect.
So he would do, what would the two screens be, the two pieces of glass be?
So one would be, he used slide film.
Right.
So that means it comes out as a positive, and he would take his camera and throw the lens out of focus and take the shot, but you have to overexpose it out of focus, otherwise it comes out very dark.
Hmm.
And then he would take a regular shot and he would slide the two sheets of slide film on top of each other, sandwich them into the one frame, and then display it.
Hmm. I wonder why that comes out exactly the same as what we're doing here.
Well, as I understand it, the multiply has the effect of as if you had two slides and overlaid them.
Oh, okay.
And the, what we're doing with the screen is we're simulating overexposure onto something without blowing anything out. So we could, with our tripod, have taken an image and overexposed it and then put our camera out of focus. We could have taken two separate images and just multiplied them together.
See, I expected, because you were talking about this overexposure, that we would have, at some point, taken the exposure and cranked it up.
We're using the screen blending mode to give us a nicer, more controlled overexposure.
Hmm.
Without stuff getting blown out and icky. And you'll notice when you see that middle step that it doesn't look like you've dragged the exposure up too high. The shadows don't look horribly, you know, grey. They still look kind of black. And it's a nicer increase in exposure. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. Almost like there's some logic applied.
Well, there is logic applied. It's whatever right. The algorithm is for screening is what's applied.
Well, this is pretty cool. I've actually, while you were describing it the second time how it was done, I've actually done it to a second photograph and came out with a pretty cool effect, actually.
Excellent.
It is really fast once you get the hang of it. I'll never remember the steps, though. That's why the screen
steps. Duplicate, screen, merge, duplicate, multiply.
Right.
Well, no, it is actually very quick.
Yeah, it is. So taking the right photograph might be helpful.
It doesn't work on everything. Some people say on the internet, if you believe the internet, that it works very well on cityscapes as well.
Oh, now I just did it. There were some beautiful archways in Mexico that had, it was three arches. It's got a set of flags of the American flag and the Mexican flag and the Barcelo flag for the hotel. And then we've got a sunset shot, but on top of the arches, it says Feliz Navidad and Merry Christmas in bright lights. And that came out. That came out a really neat effect.
That does sound like it would work very well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a more interesting photograph. I think got to mess with the blur. Maybe not blur it quite as much because it's a little bit fuzzy to read the letters now. But it does come out pretty neat.
Yeah, you can experiment with blurring more or less, but you definitely want to blur it enough that the detail has to be gone.
Hmm.
Otherwise, you won't get that ethereal out of focusness. For coining, a better term.
Coining new phrases again. Well, this is pretty cool, Bart. This will give people something fun to do. And as the final pieces fall off of their Christmas tree.
Now's the time. There's no point in us talking about this in January. We definitely got to talk about it now.
Right, right. We had to buy ours awfully early because we were gone the week before Christmas. We bought ours 2 weeks before Christmas. And then now we'll keep it till New Year's. We don't believe in having it up after New Year's. It's all gone. So,
you take it down on January 1st? Or?
January 1st. Yep. Tear it all down. Everything's gone.
So while you're hungover from celebrating the new year, you're ripping down Christmas tree.
Yeah, it's a horrible day.
It sounds like a really horrible day, actually.
Oh, it is. For about, and we have to take down all the decorations inside the house and all the lights outside. It's like 4 or 5 hours of misery.
Yeah, I didn't go with lights outside. That's a bit much. Actually, just to add a little bit of extra, I took my photographs of the tree last night, came down this morning, plugged in the lights, and the colored ones aren't working anymore.
Oh, you're kidding me. They're brand new.
They're brand new, and they're not working. And I changed the little fuse light in case that was it, and I pushed in. I didn't push in all 100 because I can't reach the top of the tree.
Oh, no.
Obviously, something's gone belly up. Christmas is over.
In the newer ones, you're not supposed to have every bulb working anymore.
I know, because I've had it where a bulb goes out, and it still kept working.
Yeah.
In the same design of light. So I don't know what's going on. Maybe it blew the fuse down at the plug, but I can't see why it would.
Maybe switch the two plugs?
No, I tried that. I plugged it into different places and stuff in case it was the actual plug that was wrong.
Oh, that's sad. But you got your picture, so who cares?
Well, A, we lasted Christmas, which is important. And B, we got our picture.
There you go. All right, well, this is pretty cool. I enjoyed this. And I'm going to go take some pictures tonight of my Christmas tree and try it. Now I'm going to start doing it to everything. Pictures of Kyle, you know.
Oh, it does apparently work very well for portraits, too.
Oh.
According to the internet.
According to the internet.
I got to say that.
The internet told me.
I haven't tried this. I've only tried it on my tree.
I like it. All right, Bart. Well, let's see. We on for next week?
I think so. I'm at my parents' for New Year's Eve, but I think I'm going to be home before the weekend is out, so we should be able to record.
All right, great. All right, well, we will talk to you next week then.
Until then, happy computing.
Well, that's going to wind up the final episode of the NoSillaCast for 2009. I wish you all a safe and enjoyable New Year celebration, and we'll see you in the new year. Please send in your dumb questions, comments, and suggestions to Allison at podfeet.com, and be sure to follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/podfeet. And don't forget, you can follow Steve at twitter.com/SP Sheridan. Thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.